This is the podcast of Lost in the Stacks on WREK Atlanta. Thanks for listening. If you have a moment, would you rate us or review us on whatever system you're using to listen? We would love to reach more listeners, and ratings and reviews help spread the word. Thanks.
Crumb, do you know what that is? An egg?
Yeah. What kind of egg?
Bird egg?
No. It's a pterodactyl egg. It's fossilized. It's 90 million years old. In the entire world, only two of these have ever been found.
You know, that may be worth something.
You are listening to WREK Atlanta. This might be worth something. This is Lost in the Stacks, the Research Library Rock and Roll Radio Show. I'm Charlie Bennett with Fred Rasko, Emmy Decker, and Wendy Hagenmeyer in the studio. Josh is on the board, unfettered by a carbonaceous film. Each week on this show, we pick a theme and use it to create a mix of music and library talk. Whichever you're here for, we hope you dig it.
Dig it. That's appropriate
it's
for
just
today.
What I say, Fred.
Dig
it. Is not
it.
A pun. It's
fossils,
what I say.
Dig it. So our show today is called Fossils in Glorious 3D, and it's about a library digital repository that contains 3D scans of its university fossil collection. And when you hear about these amazing 3D fossils on today's radio show, I mean, the 3D is so amazing, you'll swear they are right there in the room with you.
What are you, like an IMAX it's ad? Like this right is there. Not a visual medium.
Not to worry, gentlemen. We have a guest that will explain it all, and you'll see the 3D in your mind's eye.
In your mind's eye. Whoa, psychedelic. Today we'll speak with Chad Hutchins of the University of Wyoming, who has found a unique way to share important scholarly information contained in the prehistoric remains found in his home state.
If you, our listeners, want to join the conversation, the hashtag for this show is LITS357 for Lost in the Stacks, episode 357. I feel so old, practically fossilized. Feel free to tweet your thoughts, questions, or pictures of molds, casts, and impressions with that hashtag.
Our songs today are about the digitization process, finding what's hidden, and the prehistoric animals of Wyoming. There are a lot of important digital objects in the world's repositories, but as far as I'm concerned, nothing is as cool as a digital fossil. So let's start with Fossil by the Taser Puppets right here on Lost in the Stacks. This is Lost in the Stacks, and joining us by phone today is Chad Hutchins. He is the head of digital collections at the University of Wyoming Libraries. Chad, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Fred.
So, Chad, the reason that we got you on the phone today is because there's you're head of digital collections at University of Wyoming Libraries, and so you work with a lot of cool digital stuff in a repository there. That's the UW Digital Repository at the University of Wyoming. But there's a sub-collection in that repository that we here at Lost in the Stacks saw and we just had to ask you about. It is a collection of 3D fossil images. Can you tell us a little bit about like what that is?
Yeah, sure. So What this sub-collection is, at least currently, is a bit of a pilot project, something that we started working on with our geological museum here on campus about a year and a half ago now, maybe longer. Sometimes time flies by pretty quickly. But basically, this collection is three-dimensional models as well as images of fossils and bones and anything else that's in the geological museum. So instead of just doing typical two-dimensional photography of objects or three-dimensional objects. When I first met the new curator here, well, she's not new anymore, but her name's Laura Vietti. She's been really, really essential to this project. She's been on board since the very beginning.
This is a curator she was at really the interested in, geology department?
Yeah, she's the curator for the Geological Museum, and its home is in the Geology and Geophysics Department here at the University of Wyoming. Mm-hmm. So Laura and I were interested in doing something a little bit different. You know, you can take two-dimensional images of fossils and things like that, but you can't really reproduce something, you can't really preserve something just with two-dimensional photography as easily as you could with a three-dimensional model. So we kind of set out with this, not really knowing exactly where it was going to go, and we purchased a pretty affordable, and you know that's a relative term, at least to us, not completely inaccessible in terms of price, mm-hmm. Three-dimensional scanner, as well as a mobile laptop so that we could move this back and forth between the Geological Museum or the libraries because we're on separate sides of campus. And we just started learning how to do this after we did a lot of research into different scanners and how much versus how much we wanted to spend. And basically what we ended up settling on was we wanted to pick, or Laura is picking, I should say, because I'm not a paleontologist and she is. We're picking fossils from the UW Geological Museum that represent different geological time periods in Wyoming. The really nice thing about this collection, or the great thing about UW's collection is, well, not only is Wyoming a hotbed for dinosaurs and fossil remains, and we're here in Wyoming, obviously, but also we have representation of fossils from pretty much every time period, and it lets us get a really good example of, you know, evolutionary studies, things related to climate, and one of the really strong pieces of the UW Geological Museum's collection, and I'm probably not going to say this as well as Laura would say it, and she'd probably ding me if she heard this, because I'll probably screw something up, but basically we have representation of mammals on both sides of the extinction of the dinosaurs, so that's called the KPG event, mm-hmm. which was about 66 million years ago. So before the KPG event, we have, you know, really small mammals and their representation, and then after the dinosaurs are extinct, we have a representation of how mammals dispersed throughout the continent and throughout the world and grew in size and things like that. So it's a really good collection for that particular kind of study. So it's been really interesting from a librarian perspective because, you know, we aren't paleontologists, obviously, and we don't typically get to work with material. Like
right. This is a unique kind of content for libraries. And just to back up a little bit for listeners, when you go to the Wyoming Digital Repository and find this page of 3D fossil images, what you are seeing, I'll kind of try to describe it, is if you remember, if you're old enough to remember like what web pages were like in the early 2000s and everybody had like a spinning graphic
right.
at the top, what you see is antelope skulls, smilodon skulls, dinosaur teeth, and they're all rotating, but they're not photographs, as you said. It's not like a rotating photo. It is a scanned image that is in the repository, and they're available to download and manipulate, I presume?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. So part of the reason that we chose to make the images rotating was we don't have a really easy way within the repository system that we currently use, which is Islandora. We don't have an easy way to render a 3D model on the web within that system right now. So what we were going for with this is we're trying to give users the idea that you can actually download these three-dimensional models and do something with them, that they're not just a two-dimensional image. So if you're looking at one of those records, there's a link that says download the 3D files. Mm-hmm. So So what we're doing right now, because there are no really good preservation standards for three-dimensional objects yet, but there are some. There are basically three or four different file types that are in broad use, and those are all represented in a zip container that we package all these files up in. So one can download either an OBJ, a PLY, or an STL three-dimensional model, and then you can take that and use it with any other kind of three-dimensional rendering program that you want, basically. There are open source options out there for that. There are obviously commercial options for it. If listeners don't want to pay a lot of money for something and they want an open source solution to explore some of these models, Mesh Lab is a really good option. If you don't want to pay any money to look at them, of course, there's certainly trial versions of commercial model or commercial three-dimensional applications. But yes, basically, somebody can download these models. They can manipulate them. We are looking into having either high school kids or junior high school age kids try and put together different models and see if they can make full skeletons out of them in three-dimensional applications. So it's a really interesting way to engage kids as well as learn about technology, to learn about stratigraphy, to learn about the geological history of the Earth. There's so many applications for this, it really kind of boggles the mind.
And I really want to get into the applications for this,
yeah.
Because it, just looking at it, you know, even though it's kind of the old-fashioned spinning thing, it is really
sure.
Cool when you realize what it is that you're actually looking at. And so in the next segment, I think we want to get into what we can do
okay.
as users with these collections. We're speaking with Chad Hutchins of the University of Wyoming Libraries, and we will be back with more about 3D fossils, 3D fossil models, after a music set.
File this set under QE75.B9.
Sabertooth by Samurai Shotgun, and before that we started the set with Antelope by Diagrams. Those are songs about some of the kinds of animals you can find in the Wyoming 3D Fossil Repository.
Welcome back to Lost in the Stacks. Today we're talking about 3D fossil models in digital repositories, and we're talking to Chad Hutchins of the University of Wyoming Libraries. And Chad, in the first segment, we started to talk a little bit about what these really cool scanned 3D models of fossils are used for, particularly in research. And I get that, a model that you can transfer digitally maybe would be useful for someone who's not on the ground, on the scene in Wyoming.
Sure.
But what other kind of research uses are there for these 3D models that are in your collection?
Yeah, okay. I can get into that. So a lot of this I learned just by working with the paleontologists and actually observing that they'll have visiting scholars or we actually hired a couple of their graduate students to help us with a lot of this work. So we've learned probably as much from them as they have from us about libraries. But one of the scanners that we bought is actually more of a digital microscope, and it can do really strong magnification and imagery and three-dimensional models and things like that. So one of the things that they typically look at, and actually about three-quarters of this collection in the Geological Museum, which is about 40,000 specimens, about 30,000 of the specimens are actually teeth or mandibles or parts of an upper jaw or the upper part of a teeth from a skull.
Is that just because of what's abundant in the fossil record in Wyoming?
Yeah, it's because the teeth are harder. They don't degrade as much as bone does, so they end up being preserved more often than bone does, from what I understand. Hopefully I'm not misspeaking there, but basically what what we've actually seen people come in and look for is they'll come in and they know what the Geological Museum has because they have a database of all their content, but they don't have images of them. Mm-hmm. So what this enables is researchers from afar, obviously, you kind of already touched on that, but what they can do if they actually do make it to campus, or once we get a lot of this, a lot of these 3D, three-dimensional models available, they'll be able to look at these tiny little teeth that are sometimes, especially on really ancient mammals, these mammals, which were the largest at the time, are the size of like a modern mouse. So the teeth are really tiny, they're the size of a pinhead. Mm-hmm. But what they'll do is they'll put it under this digital microscope and magnify it, and they look at wear patterns in the teeth. And you wouldn't normally think that this would be anything that you could glean any information from. But they look at these wear patterns, and it lets them know, how large the animal was. And then they look at wear patterns on the teeth. And when you magnify them, you can actually see... they can identify what kinds of plants these animals were eating, or what kinds of other animals they were eating, if we're talking about carnivores. But that sort of information, they can tie that with what plants were living in the region at the time. That gives them ideas about, how warm it might have been, how wet or dry the climate might have been. So there's climatological studies that they can tie to some of these, which is really interesting. And until you actually see in person a researcher saying, oh my gosh, I could have never done this without this digital technology, it really kind of opens up all the possibilities for you when you see that in person. Right. So, but a lot of what you can do with these models is they can make profiles of them, they can take really exact digital measurements across like one peak of a molar to the other side of the molar. Then when you get into the bigger things like the skulls and, legs and things like that, they can take better measurements with digital technology as long as the scan is true to what the actual analog form is. They can do computational modeling with these. They can figure out how large they were by looking at different specimens. So there's lots of morphological studies that they can do with them, extinction studies, and... if you get out of the real heavy research area, one of the things that they're really interested in doing is developing, curriculum materials for K-12 kids. So one of the ideas that Laura had come up with, that's the museum curator, was apparently, and I didn't know this, an ostrich finger, if you scale it up by about 10 times, looks exactly like a Tyrannosaurus Rex finger.
This would presumably be the part of the wing that's like analogous to a finger.
Yeah, I think so.
Right.
So basically, what we do is we take a scan of a T-Rex phalange or part of its finger and one from an ostrich, and scale them to the same size and print them on a 3D printer and put them in front of a student and say, "Can you tell which is which?" And then that gets them engaged with evolutionary studies and. Makes them think about how things changed over time. But there's all sorts of examples of things like that the museum curator and the paleontologists over there are thinking about that, librarians would never, well, most librarians, unless they have a paleontology degree, I guess, would probably never know anything about that, and I certainly didn't. So it's been a really interesting project just collaborating with them.
Right, and it's fascinating that, my mind jumped immediately to the fact that, you don't have to be at the physical thing to access
right.
it, and that was the advantage. But it sounds like there's, even if you're there and you have the fossil there in a drawer, you're still getting something from these magnified digital images that's of use. Even if you have the fossil there, you're getting something more from the digital image.
I should also mention, one of the things that we probably would think about from a preservation aspect, and certainly the museum curators do as well, but every time you handle these things, you introduce the potential to destroy it, basically. You can drop these on the floor, and they shatter into a million pieces. They do loans of these objects across the country, and they go out in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be lost, it could be crushed in a shipping truck or something like that. It could potentially be stolen. So doing this also has a preservation aspect to it. You know, these things are absolutely, you can't replace them, period.
No.
So that's another aspect of this project is preservation of the actual objects themselves.
Nice. Well, you're listening to Lost in the Stacks, and we're going to talk more with Chad Hutchins about 3D fossil models on the left side of the hour.
This is Burgess Jules of the Documenting the Now Project.
And Ed Summers of the Documenting the Now Project.
And you are listening to Lost in the Stacks.
WREK Atlanta.
Today's show is called Fossils in Glorious 3D. Dear listener, I suspect that you may be thinking that, yes, a repository of digital versions of fossils is no doubt cool. Yet nothing can take the place of the original piece, there on a shelf or on a display, tangible, fixed, possessed of a material oomph. Surely, the curated, scanned copy, no matter how beneficial to the wider scholarly community, is somehow just a little less noble than its ossified original. But this is what libraries do. They bring the copies to the masses to disseminate knowledge. Of course we preserve the original. We don't throw away Isaac Newton's handwritten notes simply because his laws of thermodynamics are now copied and circulated widely. No, we throw them away for different reasons. But the copy contains just as much of the idea as the original. Indeed, in the world of the fragile and rare, like myself, the copy helps preserve the original. To quote Stephen Jay Gould from his essay, Four Antelopes of the Apocalypse. Yes, Four Antelopes of the Apocalypse. Curators may be guardians of the second best, but what can be more residually noble than faithful preservation and accurate documentation of often pitiable fragments? File this set under Z701.2.D54R54.
Okay, all right.
All right, we're all anxious to start whenever you want to.
Okay. Now?
Yep.
Diggin' by Los Dominados, and before that, Scanners by John Jacob, and we started off with Shake It and Break It by Sunhouse. Songs about some of the steps you take to get a fossil from the ground into a 3D digital image.
Welcome back to Lost in the Stacks, and we're talking about 3D fossils that are in the University of Wyoming Digital Repository. Quite a unique output of digital scholarship. And our guest talking about this is Chad Hutchins. He is the head of digital collections at the University of Wyoming Libraries. Chad, in the last segment, we ended talking about how the digital file is kind of a one method of preservation of the actual physical fossil that has been scanned. Has that ever actually come to pass that the original got destroyed and the existing thing is just the digital file?
Yeah, actually, I can think of two instances, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
One of the, I guess it wasn't an early one, we probably scanned this skeleton about a year ago, and as I mentioned, the Geological Museum is on one side of campus and we're on the other side of campus, and sometimes we try and move our equipment over there, but they don't have the space to keep the scanner in a room to do it in.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of what we've done, we've moved across campus, and one day we were over there moving a antelope skull, ancient antelope skull. And this antelope, you know, if listeners are thinking about antelope, they're probably thinking, oh, it's about the size of a large dog or maybe a miniature horse or something like that. Well,
uh-huh,
ancient antelope
right.
were tiny. They were about the size of a small dog, like 35 pounds. But they looked very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a full skeleton put together of this. So we were moving a whole mounted skeleton and putting it in the back of a large SUV. And, you know, it's got antlers that stick up vertically, and we weren't watching as closely as we should have been, and we broke the antlers off. And they fell on the floor, and we all screeched and thought the world was ending. But we were able to put it back together, but this was after we scanned it. We were moving it back to the
floor. Wait, put it back together like just some glue and whistle and hope that nobody notices?
We thought it was going to be something really involved, and, you know, the curator was there with us when it happened, and it was obviously not her desired outcome, but, you know, apparently these things happen, and unfortunately...
So she was okay with it?
I don't want to say that she was okay with it, but, you know, it was repairable, but obviously once you break it, it's broken, and... You know, any kind of digital derivative that we would create from the broken one would be representative of that break.
Okay.
You know, I don't think we lost any material, but and it didn't shatter into a million pieces or anything like that. But, you know, the tops of the antlers were broken off. And, you know, I think that I don't know how often that sort of thing happens, but, you know, these are fragile in a lot of cases. You can break them pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
We've had teeth that have just basically disintegrated into powder just by picking it up. You know, it does happen, unfortunately. It's kind of like an old book, you know, you turn the page and it'll fall apart sometimes because it's so brittle.
Well, it seems like kind of a unique challenge that you're dealing with, but I don't know, because this is the only kind of repository of digital fossil images, 3D images that I know of. Can you talk about other digital repositories out there?
Yeah, we've looked pretty long and hard at a couple other ones of note. The Smithsonian is actually doing some pretty interesting things, and it's not all fossils, obviously, but there's something called Smithsonian X3D that listeners might want to take a look at. That's all sorts of different kinds of materials, including planes. I think they're one of the Wright brothers' planes they've digitized in 3D.
Wow.
And then another one is called Idaho Virtual Laboratories in Idaho. And they've actually done a lot of whale skeletons, of all things, in addition to numerous other things. And then one other one I should mention out of Duke University is a project called Morphosource. And I think they're doing three-dimensional modeling with micro-CT scanners. So there are efforts around the country, you know, in a lot of different settings doing these sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, it's still pretty nascent right now. There hasn't been a lot of momentum, and there aren't a lot of agreed upon, you know, not just preservation standards, but, you know, what kind of metadata do you capture from a three-dimensional file?
Right.
What should you capture? What should you preserve? Things like that.
Are there discussions happening along those lines?
There are. Indiana University and the University of Oklahoma, and I believe, I might get this wrong, maybe University of Washington have a collaborative grant. I believe it's an IMLS grant to talk about three-dimensional object preservation for digital libraries. I don't think that's actually been approved yet, but it's in the works. So there are a lot of people talking about how do you preserve virtual reality applications? How do you preserve three-dimensional files? What aspects of it should you preserve? What shouldn't you preserve? Things like that.
It seems like that's really important work, because there's more and more types of digital scholarship, you know, become accepted, and there's like digital, you know, research output. More and more kinds of things are gonna come about. There's gonna be just like different kinds of outputs and collections out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the really interesting thing about it is, you know, libraries are part of this discussion, but they're not central to the discussion yet.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of where these sorts of content come from, they're not in libraries. They're in museums. They're in small museums. They're in, you know, biodiversity collections. And those specific disciplines are having their own discussions, but they have different priorities than libraries do. And I would say that they have a lot of expertise in terms of preserving the physical objects, but I don't think they have as much expertise in preserving digital content as libraries and archives do. So it's a really good collaboration, to be honest, and I think they need us as much as we need them. That was one thing that Laura had said to me at one time was, oh, you know, you don't really need us. And I said, oh, actually, we do. We wouldn't even have the opportunity to think about this without working with somebody like them. And, you know, we have the technical infrastructure and expertise that they don't have a lot of times.
I imagine.
It's a good blend.
I imagine there are going to be a lot more similar collaborations in libraries in the future. Speaking today with Chad Hutchins. He is head of digital collections at the University of Wyoming Libraries, and we've been talking about 3D fossil images in the University of Wyoming Institutional Repository Collection. Chad, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Fred. It was my pleasure.
File this set under G4261.F7.
You just heard Out of the Darkness by the Ups and Downs, and before that, Past is Past by the Dishrags, and prior to that, it was Kicking Stones by the Monkees. These are songs about taking the time to look to the past and to find something that's hidden, shouldn't we all?
Today's show is called Fossils in Glorious 3D. This is one of our shows where we're just happy to talk about a compelling, important collection at a library.
Not only a collection worth exploring, but a reminder that digital technology can complement a physical collection. I have one word for you. Fidgetal.
Oh, no.
Of course, we dig. Get it there? Dig. Fossils.
I'm going to hurt you.
Okay, we dig the material oomph of the original objects, but we can also see them closer and with more detail using these extraordinary scans.
These collections are the doorway to history and to prehistory, so making them more accessible and more available is a win for all of us.
And that's our show for today. Go ahead, roll the credits, and hey, don't imagine a prehistoric creature slowly creeping up behind you.
Lost in the Stacks is a collaboration between WREK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library, produced by Charlie Bennett, Wendy Hagenmeyer, and Fred Rasko.
Josh was our engineer today, and our show was brought to you by a slow replacement of organic tissue with minerals.
Legal counsel and a lifetime supply of amber with mosquitoes in it were provided by the Burris Intellectual Property Law Group in Atlanta, Georgia.
Special thanks to Chad for being on the show, to the University of Wyoming for their awesome hidden collections, and thanks, as always, to each and every one of you for listening.
Find us online at lostinthestacks.org, and you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and plenty of other places we don't know about.
Next week on Lost in the Stacks, we go local and visit the Emory Music Archive.
Time for our last song today, and thanks to the efforts of some librarians collaborating with faculty in Wyoming, they have a really cool digital collection to share with the world. Here's to all the other librarians and archivists stoking their curiosity and finding those hidden collections to add to our cultural knowledge and heritage, working to avoid the ultimate nightmare of the information professional, not being able to find it.
No!
So let's close with Won't Find It by the Bomb Pops right here on Lost in the Stacks. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening to Lost in the Stacks from WREK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library. Find us online at wrek.org/lostinthestacks to see playlists for old shows, connect with our social media, or get in touch with us.